Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Yud Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 8 lines from the top of Daf Yud Beis. We open with a quote from the Mishnah. The Mishnah was dealing with someone who instructed for a get, or a document freeing a slave, to be given to his wife or his servant. At that point, can he back out? So the Chachamim in the Mishnah made a distinction between a get isha, a divorce document where the husband can back out, as opposed to the freedom document where he cannot back out. The distinction being that in the case, it was a general principle that you're not allowed to impose a detriment on someone long distance. In other words, unless you are dealing directly with the losing party, you can't have them experience loss by the actions of an intermediary. So if he asks someone to take a divorce document on behalf of his slave, the slave is actually, he's not losing out by being freed. You'll say, well, as a slave he was being supported by the master, and now he's not going to be supported. Well, even as a slave, the master had an option of not supporting him. So by being free, he's not losing out. He's not going a step down from his existence, from his status as a slave. The same is not true with regard to a wife. As a married woman, the husband is obligated to support her. He doesn't have the option of not supporting her. Therefore, being divorced is to her detriment, because at that point she won't receive his support. She's losing out. So that's the quote that our Mishnah opens up with, is from that section. She'im yirtze shelo lozun es avdu rashoi, shelo lozun es ishto eino rashoi. On the side, we have a topic heading. Point one of the topic heading is called the Nosei. Point one, asei imi v'eini zoncha, be'eved be'isha. Can a master say to his servant, You're going to work for me, and I'm not going to support you? Can he say that to his wife? You're going to be my wife, but I'm not supporting you. And we say asei mi means your income will come to me. Whatever you produce by way of income will come to me, but I am not going to be supporting you. A second concept that we'll see is a man says to a wife, for example, he said, "Si'i ma'asei yodayach b'mezonosayach." In exchange for my not supporting you, in other words, I'm not going to feed you, but you keep your income for your own support. Can a husband say that? As we scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice there's quite a bit of marking activity in this sukkah. So let's explain what we're going to see. The triangles that we see are explained, as well as the bow ties. The bow ties, you can see, highlight the expression Yochol Harav. And the triangles are, let's read on the side under the Mivneh heading, which, by the way, goes Ad Emtza Omud Beis. It goes until the middle of Omud Beis. We have a long marking scheme. The triangles are Nisyonos Lifshoit HaSheela, attempts to answer the following question. Im yochol harav loimar la'avdo yasei mi iveini zondra. Can a master say to his slave, you are going to work for me, and I am not going to support you? So these are attempts to prove that a master can do that. When you see the inverted triangle, Try to even right now, just skimming down the page, do you see the triangles in these two alternating directions? If you see that, the inverted triangle, you will then realize, is our dechios, their responses or rejections of that suggestion. In our Mishnah, we saw that a slave, by being freed, isn't losing out. So the Gemara asks, Shamis Mino, can we conclude from our Mishnah, Yochel Harav Loimar Le'eved, that a master can say to his slave, he's currently his slave, Asei Imi V'eini Zoncha, you're going to work for me, and I am not going to support you. In other words, whatever work you do will be for my benefit. Whatever income you produce goes to me, the master, and I'm not supporting you. So, from our Mishnah, it would seem we should be able to conclude that. Because our Mishnah said that by being freed, this slave isn't losing out. Ah, but when he's freed, he's not going to get support. Well, the Mishnah indicates he wouldn't have received support anyway from the master, and therefore being freed is not a detriment, and we would be able to conclude that a master could say to a slave, "Asei imi v'eini zoncha." The Gemara responds, no, from our Mishnah you cannot conclude that. Hocha b'mai askinon. The Mishnah is talking about D'yomalei tsei ma'asei Yodecha v'mezoinesecha. The master is not going to support him. However, he has to offer support in the form of your own income will go to you. So when the Mishnah says that the master has a right not to support the servant, that's true, provided he says you keep your own income to support yourself. We have a bracketed section, and if you skip the bracketed section momentarily, you see a triangle. Again, the Gemara goes back and tries to prove that master can say. You see the bow tie that follows a couple lines later at the beginning of the line, where the Gemara is trying to prove at that second triangle that Yochel Harav Lomar Le'eved Asei Mi Ve'eini Zoncha. In other words, again, to try to prove that. And once again, you will see an inverted triangle saying that you can't conclude that from the source that the Gemara will quote at triangle number 2, because it's talking about Sei Ma'asei Odecha L'mezunasecha. Now, what happens in the brackets? So we look in the margin. We have a note, a starred note, and it says Hasograyim Po. That means these brackets that bracket off about 5 lines, Ubahem Shech, and the Gemara, in the continuation of the Gemara, you'll notice a longer bracketed section. You can see to the immediate right-hand side of your Gemara text a vertical dash dotted line. That's your bracket length indicator. So you can see there's another bracketed section, Miyuados, they are designed, Levoideid, to isolate, Kitei Gemara, sections of Gemara, Shebohem Yesh Diyun, there's a discussion within these brackets, Im Efshor Lahamid Ha Dechiya Shel Hochaba Mayaskinan. This rejection that is featured in the inverted triangle, does this rejection really last? Likras Sof Haktoyim Misborer, by the time you get to the end of the bracketed sections, it becomes clear she'efshul lahamid hadechiyah, that the dechiyah lasts. In other words, the rejection is a good rejection, and therefore we're going to have to move lochein ha'gemara mamshicha lenasois lifshot she'loseinu im yochol orav to say asei mi ve'ini zoncha mi mekeros noisafim, from additional sources. So this is going to be the scheme of the Gemara as we continue. Now that the structure is clear, as we hope, we go into the brackets and realize we're now asking a question. Are you telling me then that the Mishnah is telling the master is not leaving this slave high and dry without any means of support? He's simply telling the servant, I'm not going to support you, but whatever income you produce, you keep for yourself and support yourself with that. The Gemara asks, De kavosa gabi isha. Kavosa means in a parallel case by a woman. The Mishnah taught slave and wife in the same context. So whatever case we assign to the servant, we have to speak similarly regarding the woman. So the kafosa gabi isha, the Omar law, are you going to tell me it's where the husband said to her, tzi ma'asai ma'asai yodayach b'mezonosayach, I'm not going to be supporting you, but you keep your own income for your own support. Isha amaylo, why would the husband not be able to say that to his wife? And yet in our Mishnah it says that a master is allowed to not support the slave, but he's not allowed to withhold support from his wife. But one second, if he's offering the wife this deal, you keep your own income for your own support, well, why not? Answer, Isha b'dalo safka. The case of the woman is it would not suffice. So a husband cannot withhold support and rely on her supporting herself when her income will not be sufficient. Well, then Eved nami b'dalo safik. Then the parallel case of an Eved also. His work, his income, wouldn't be sufficient to support him. The Gemara says that's not a possibility, because a person wouldn't hold on to an Eved that actually is going to cost him. A person has an Eved because he is helpful to his household, he produces income, he's worth it. Avdo dinahom krese lo shavi lamore lamarte, an eved nahom is bread, the bread of his belly. In other words, an eved that's not worth the food that he eats is not worth it to his master or mistress to keep on board. Lamai misbi, what do they need him for? People will keep slaves in their houses and feed them, the expectation being that whatever the cost of the food is certainly outweighed by the benefit they receive from the servant. So that you can't possibly say that the case of the slave is a slave where it's not enough, where he works but he doesn't produce enough even to support himself. In the case of the woman, the reason he is not allowed to, the husband's not allowed to say, is because she doesn't really produce enough to maintain herself. That's a reality. That is not a reality when you're dealing with a slave. But after all is said and done, the Mishnah is not referring to a master that says to his slave, you're going to give me your income and I'm not supporting you. Well, Toshma, we go on with another source and try to we readdress that question. We have a source. It says Eved Shigola Laore Miklat, a slave who committed an unintentional murder. And the Torah says that one who commits an unintentional murder is exiled to a city of refuge. There are six major cities of refuge. There are actually a total of an additional 42, but that's not our topic right now. All that you have to realize is that that's the circumstance of the Eved Shigola La'ir Miklat. He committed a murder unintentionally. Ein Rabo Chayav Lozuno. The master is not obligated to support him. Velo od elo shemaise yodov l'rabo. Whatever income he produces is transferred to his master. So the Gemara asks, Shamis Mina, shall we conclude from here? Yochel Rav Lomer Levit Asay Imi V'Eini Zoncha, you're going to work for me. You can see in this source, Maisi Yadav goes to the master, and he doesn't. The master doesn't support him. So should we conclude that a Rav can say, the Rav is the master, say to his slave, Asay Imi V'Eini Zoncha? The Gemara rejects that. In other words, you can't conclude that. Hocha B'Mayaskinon. The Tanaic source regarding the slave and the Ir Miklat is talking about the following. Di Omar Lo, the master had told the servant, Tzi'i Maise Yodecha L'Mezoinesecha. You keep your whatever income you produce for yourself. And again, brackets, you notice. And you notice the length of the brackets, of course. At the end of this bracketed section, there's going to be an angular brackets where within there, the Gemara tries to say that this issue of the Rav saying, Asei mi ve'ini zonchos ha-machlokes tanoyim, that is not going to work out. So if you drop down to the end of that bracketed section, you'll notice, again, a triangle, three lines from the bottom, and you guessed it. The Gemara is going to try to prove from a teaching of Rav that a master can say, Asei imi vein izoncha. Again, the bottom line of the Gemara, you can see that's rejected. Let's go back now over the Gemara where we left off. We left off in a bracketed section. The Eved is in an ear miklat, and we're not going to conclude that a master can say, Asei imi vein izoncha. Rather, the master offered the slave, he said, Tzei ma'asei yodecha l'mizonasecha. The Gemara asks, if that's the case in this triangle, in the number two triangle source, Ihachi ma'asei yodov amai l'rabo. The source said that the income of the slave goes to the master, but the master said, you keep your own income for your own support. What does it mean that ma'asei yodov goes to the rabo, to the master? Answer, the extra. In other words, there's a person needs, let's say, $20 a day to live on, and this slave makes $22 a day. So the $2 that are beyond his basic needs are transferred to the master. The Gemara says, ha'adofa pshito. Well, isn't that obvious? Do you need a Tanaic source to tell me that income above and beyond his maintenance goes to the master? The Gemara says, yeah, I do need a source to tell me that's not so obvious. Mahu de tema kevon dechi les le lo yohiv le ki isle nami lo lishko mine. I might have thought as follows, that since there could be days where the slave doesn't produce enough to support himself, we said he needs $20 a day to live on, he might have slow days where he produces $15 a day. So he's short $5 on those days. So therefore, since on days that he doesn't make enough, the master is not going to give him the balance. When there is extra, maybe that extra does not get transferred to the owner. In other words, he'll have that the bountiful days will compensate for the days of lacking. Kamash Malon, we are therefore telling you that's not so. That on days when he produces more than his basic needs, that gets transferred to the master. The Gemara asks, Umai Shna Laore Miklot, what's special about the slave having gone to the city of refuge? Apparently, this halacha that a master can say to his slave, "Asei imi," he could say to him, "Say ma'asei yodecha l'mizonasecha," is not something that's unique to a city of refuge. So, why does the source speak about a city of refuge? Salko daita chamina. I would have thought, without this source, and I have just the Torah to go on, the written Torah, it says, V'chai, with regard to the ear miklat, you see that word. And I would have interpreted the word V'chai, which literally means, and he shall live, but it means Ovid lei chiyusa tfei, that in an ear miklat, we go overboard. In other words, we make extra provisions for him. Komash malon, so the Tanaic source reveals to us that we don't do that. And we don't give the slave the extra on his days of bounty just because the Torah says v'chai. The Gemara asks, v'ha midikotoni seifa. However, from the fact that the end of that source goes on to say, aval isha shigolsa le'orei miklot, bailo chayov b'mezoneseh, a woman that goes in, that committed a murder unintentionally, and she goes to the city of refuge, the husband is obligated to support her. So the husband is obligated to support her. What are the circumstances, Michlal? Delo Omar law. It must be, he didn't say, see, maise yodayech lemezonos, keep your own income. Di Omar law, by law, if the husband had said that to her, amai chayiv, why would the husband be obligated to support her? So the source is not talking about a case of, see, maise yodayech lemezonos, whom it is safe for the law, Omar law. And from the fact in the Sefer, the section regarding the woman, he, the husband, did not say that to her. Reisha nami delo omar lei. We're highlighting the word reisha with a diamond simply to make the reading easier so you can focus on what really was the case with the slave. So at this point, the case with the slave, it must be that he did not say to the slave, say, Maisa Yodecha Bimazainisecha. Oh, if he didn't say that, then we will go back to our original conclusion and say that a master could say to his slave, I say imi, vieni zoncha. The source indicated the Rav is not supporting him, and the Maisa Yodayim, the income goes to the master. Lioilom di Omar Le. The source really is going back to the case where he did say, now we dashed underlined the Omar Leh so that your eye can connect with the previous dashed underlining where it said, say ma'aseh yodecho lemezeinei secha. He did say that. Ve'isha, now in the case of the woman, why does the source in the Seifa say the husband must support her? Bidalo sofka. She doesn't produce enough for her own maintenance. The Gemara asks, "V'ha midekatani seifa." The seifa of the ear miklot source says, "V'im omar lo tsei maase yodayech b'mezaynoi sayich." Rashoi, if the husband offered the wife, "Keep your own income," he's allowed to do thusly, and he wouldn't have to support her. He can offer her to keep her own income. So you do see in the Ir Miklat source the idea of keep your own income, Michlal de Reisha de Lo Omar Lo. So it must be in the Reisha, he did not say that to her. Now that will reinstate the whole understanding of the Mishnah, like we thought originally, that in the Reisha, and then you go back to the case of the Eved, the master wasn't offering him to keep his own income, and we would then go back and conclude that Yochel Rav Lomar Levet Aseimi Veini Zoncha. The Gemara says, no. Hachi Ka'omar. The Mishnah, with regard to the Ir Miklat, and the case of the woman, and then we go back to the case of the servant, it's only where the master slash husband said, Tzi'i ma'aseh yodayech b'mezonosayech. And then what does the seifa mean what is the seifa then talking about? The seifa and the reisha with the wife? V'hachi ko'omar. Im maspekes. Maspekes means enough. If she produces enough income. V'omar lo tzi'i ma'aseh yodayech b'mezonosayech. Rashoi, if she produces enough income, then the husband can offer her to keep her own income for her own support, and he won't have to support her. And before that, if we would then say if she doesn't produce enough to support herself, then the husband is obligated to support her. And with regard to the slave, the master offered the slave to support himself. And the master is not obligated to support him. And as we explained earlier, if the slave produces above his basic maintenance, that will go to the master. The Gemara asks, Maspekes. Maspekes again means enough. She produces enough. My lememra. What need is there for me to tell us in a Tanaic source that the husband is allowed to make that offer to her? So the Gemara answers, without the source, I wouldn't have known that the husband can make that offer to her and and that would be a halachically acceptable arrangement. Why not? See, without the source, I would have concluded, based on a pasuk, it's a very, very well-known source, Mahu d'teimo kol kvoido bas melech penimo. The Gemara just presents the pasuk, and we're expect to understand a lot from that. So let's take a look at the Rashi. Kvoido bas melech, kol Yisrael b'nei melochim. When the pasuk refers to a bas melech, it's referring to a standard Jewish woman. All of the Jewish people are considered the children of kings. In other words, princes. So the woman is a princess. And penima, Rashi says, tsnua. Penima means inwards. It has to do with modesty. V'ein darko lotseis ulesavev be'ir she'eino misham. Don't forget, she's in an ir miklat. And she's not from there. People don't know her in that town. How is she going to drum up business to support herself? So she'd have to go knocking on people's doors or sitting out in a public area with a sign or what have you. It's not the normal, it's not the way of a bas melech to go circulate in a city that she's not from there. They don't know that she has particular skills that they would bring their needs to her doorstep. Unless she knocks on doors, let's say she's a seamstress, so she'd have to knock on doors saying, do you need any clothing mending, do you need any dresses made, etc. and so forth. And that involves going in the streets from house to house. That's not considered the standard of modesty that the Torah expects of our Jewish women folk. So I would have thought, because of this pasuk, the husband cannot say, you maintain yourself there in the year of Miklat. Kol mashmalan. So the source tells us, yes, the husband can say that to her, and as far as kol kvoida basmel pnima, we'll have to just say that's an ideal, but when it comes to bottom line, the husband nevertheless can put her in that position where she'll have to fend for herself. Once again, that is all true, provided the income is sufficient for her own support. If not, the husband has to provide the balance. We mentioned before that this bracketed section, the angular brackets that take you to three lines from the bottom, the Gemara wants to say that the option of a master saying to his servant, "Asei imi v'eini zoncha," you're going to provide me with your income and I'm not supporting you, this is a machlokes tanaim, a tanaic controversy exists concerning that topic. By the end of this bracketed section, that we're going to reject that. And that's going to lead the Gemara three lines from the bottom to try again. And hence you'll see triangle number three over there. The starred note says what we just said orally. Let's read it together anyway. Hesber ha-sograyim, the explanation of these angular brackets. Besoch ha-sograyim ha-gemora menase la-hamid ha-shelim yochol ha-rav. The Gemara's going to try to set it up as a machlokes tanoim, but it will reject that. Now the Gemara, lema ketanoi. Can we say that the possibility of a master saying to his slave, "Asei imi v'eini zoncha," is a machlokes tanoim? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel loimer yochol ho'eved loimar l'raboi b'shnei batzoras. A slave can say to his master during years of famine, "O parnaseni, o hotzieni l'chirus," either you provide me my necessary support or free me. V'chachomim omrim horoshus biyad raboi. The chomim say the decision power is in the hands of the master. Can you guess why we've dashed, underlined the word ho'eved by Reb Shimon Gamliel, the line before, and here the word rabo? Well, the reason for this emphasis is we want to show you that according to Shimon Gamliel, the slave has the upper hand, so to speak, and the master cannot say "Asei imi v'ein izancha." Whereas, according to the Chachamim, it would appear that the decision is in the hands of the master, that he could say that. My love, beha komifligi. The house marking that you see here, and a little later on the side under the mivneh heading, we've indicated shnei hatzois or shtei hatzois, two suggestions. Eich lahamid amachlok satanim. How can we explain this machlok satanim that we just read? So the first attempt is, like we've said already, the more so of our yochol. Yochol means yochol harav loymar loevid aseimi veini zoncha. Umor so of our Reb Shlomo Gamliel, the first opinion, eino yochol. He cannot say that. The Gemara asks, if that really was the basis of the machloikis, where the master is saying to the slave, aseimi v'eini zoncha, if that's what the case really was, we have a couple of questions. Number v'tisbara, explain yourself. Number one, hi, the language of the source, oi parneseni o hotzieni lecherus, it should have said, o parneseni, either you support me, o tain li maasei yodai b'parnesosi m'boyale. Why? Does there figure any issue of setting him free? The language should have been either you support me or you give me my income for me to support myself. That would have been a reflection of an opinion where the master cannot say aseimi v'eini zoncha. But the master, and I emphasize the word master because that shows we're maintaining a master-slave relationship, and all that he would have been saying is either, and if you're giving the slave the upper hand, the slave would say either you support me or you let me keep my own income. Where does the issue of freedom come in? V'oid my shno b'shnei batzores. If their machlokes tanoim is regarding the power of a master to say, aseimi v'eini zoncha, What role does the example of famine have over here? Even in years of plenty, Rashi says, "V'od ma'ishno b'shnei batzros afili b'shnei sova." Even though I say me, once a master says to his slave, "You are going to work for me. Your income is going to go to me." Hein lo shnei batzros. All the years are years of famine. It's always a famine situation. If this was the machlokes of aseimi v'eini zoncha. So why does the source emphasize particularly years of famine? Ela hochav ma'askinon, rather new approach to the machlokes tonim. What is the case here? Diomar lo itse ma'isi yodayach yodecho lemezayne secha u'b'shnei batzoros lo sipeit. It's talking about a master saying to his slave, you keep your own income for your own support. In other words, we're not going to conclude that anyone will allow a master to say, asei imi v'eini zoncha. That we're not seeing here whatsoever. What are they talking about? Where a master said to his slave, you keep your own income for your own support. The uniqueness of shnei batzoros, it's years of famine, it's quite likely then that he will lo sipek, the slave who's going to be keeping his own income, but it won't be enough for him. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Savar. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, who introduced the issue of the slave having the upper hand and giving the ultimatum, either you support me, you provide me the balance, the difference, or set me free. He holds, O Parneseni, O Sinu Lecherus, the slave says, either you support me or set me free. What's the setting me free for? Kihechi dechazuli inshu mrachmin olai. So the people will see me and have compassion for me. As a slave, they won't have compassion for me. They won't support me. But as a free man, a freed slave becomes a full-fledged Jew. So they'll have mercy on me. V'rabbonan savri. Rabbanan hold there's no need for that in order to engender mercifulness in the hearts of the public. They hold man de merachem abnei chori aeved nami rechumi merachem. He who has compassion for free people will have compassion as well for slaves. Just to repeat the main point, we thought that maybe the issue of yochol rav loyma seimi v'eni yizonchos amachlokes tanoim, we don't see any evidence of that here. Toshma. So we try to prove from the following. Here we're not citing a Tanaic source, but we are citing a ruling of Rav. Rav was a very great Amora, and you find, in fact, in different places in the Shas, Rav is even referred to as being a Tano, so that laws that Rav teaches can also serve as the as a source, a basis for proving halacha. So, Toshma Yomar Rav Hamakdish Yedei Avdo. The crown shape that you see on the word hamakdish is featured on the side hamakdish yidei avdo. Shnei halachas shorav binyan hamakdish yidei avdo. We're going to see two halachas, one over here and one as the Gemara progresses on the sixth line from the top of Amud Beis, another crown shape where a master sanctifies the income of his slave. Hamakdish yidei avdo. Literally, he sanctifies the hands of his slave. Oiso eved loive v'oichel v'oise uporea. The slave, in order for him to live, you see what's going to. One thing is pretty clear: the income that this slave produces is going to automatically become sanctified because the master sanctified the produce, the income of his slave. What options are available for the slave? So this Rav says that slave will borrow money and use that for buying food, and then he will go on producing income, and with producing the income, he'll pay off the debt. Shmamino yochol rav lomar le'eved aseimi v'eini zoncha. So it would appear from here that a master can put his slave in this position where the slave is going to continue working, and the master is not supporting him. It says here, Rav's halacha says that he's going to have to borrow money and support himself. So the Rashi that's appropriate for this section of Gemara is found on Omid Beis at the top. Loive v'oichel oiso parea. Lo yase tchila. The order of events is first he borrows money and uses that, or borrows, so he gets food on credit, and he'll eventually pay for that, but he's not to first produce money. That's what, because the pruta kamaisa kitshala, the first pruta is the smallest denomination of money, the first pruta worth of produce that he produces will become sanctified. Vishuv osur lo, and the slave won't be able to benefit from that. He won't be able to pay back with his work income if he first amasses a certain amount of income. Each pruta that he produces will become sanctified. Ela loive tchila, first he borrows. Before he does any work, he borrows v'oichel and uses that for food. V'oise pachos mishove pruta. And then he goes and starts producing whatever he does. But he does units of less than a pruta. Let's say he's a toothpick maker, and a pruta will buy you 5 toothpicks. So he makes 4 toothpicks. That's less than a shava pruta, and then uses that to pay uporean, pay off the loan. Each time he makes 4 toothpicks, he gives that to the whoever loaned him the money for his food. Kedem b'forsh lekamei. The kosalka daitof, the thinking right now is b'shein ma'alel mezoinus, that this slave is not being supported by the master. The Kolmar, and it says, Diyochol Lahakdish, that the master can sanctify his income, the slave's income. Almo Yochol Lomar Lo, the result of this is that the master is in effect saying, Asei Imi, you're gonna produce V'eini Zochal, I'm not supporting you. Now this idea of I'm not supporting you is predicated on our accepting what Rashi says, the Saka Daitoch, the thinking that the master is not supporting the slave. Well, let's continue now in the Gemara. We're going back to the bottom line of Omid Aleph. Hocho b'may askinon. What is taking place over here? I don't know if I read the words after, we may just go back to the second line from the bottom, after reading Rav's halacha, so Shamas Mino, should we conclude from here, therefore, Yochol Rav Lomar Le'eved Aseini Veini Zoncha, that the master can put the slave in a situation where he's going to work and the master is not supporting him. The Gemara says, no, you can't conclude that from Rav's teaching here. Ocho b'mayaskin, because what we're talking about over here is b'malo mezainus. The master is supporting him. So the slave is provided for by way of mezonos. Well, ihachi, if the slave is provided for by way of mezonos, by way of food, lemai, ihachi, lemai, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, loy vevirchel, and why does the teaching of Rav include the idea that the slave borrows money for food? The Gemara says lahadofa, for extra food. There's something called the basic, the bare minimum amount of food for a person's daily maintenance, and then there's the a little extra, give him a little extra energy. The Gemara says, he's borrowing, and then we saw that, well, he's going to have to pay that off, and how's he going to pay it off? By producing the work less than a shava pruta. At the end of the day, Hektish is not going to get that. Hektish gets only the work once it reaches a pruta in value. Less than a pruta, Hektish doesn't set upon that income, that profit. So the Gemara asks, but if he's being supported by the master, and he's then borrowing and thereby going to have to pay off that loan, and Hektish isn't going to get that money for Hadofa Valeim Olei Hektish, let the temple funds, temple treasurer, say to the slave, Ad hashta sagi loch below adof, until now you were able to live without that little extra. Hashta hashtanami tizgi loch below adof. Now too, continue living without that little extra. And as a result of that, so there won't be any need for him to borrow, and hence not any need for him to pay back, and Hektish will get all of the income. The Gemara says, Hektish gufei nichole. The temple treasury itself is happy with this situation, so that slave increases in value, has a healthy body, because at some point the Hegdish itself will benefit from when this slave works and he pays off the debt. Any additional income will in fact go to the Beis HaMikdash, so that a healthy, robust slave is of greater value to the Beis HaMikdash than one who just gets by on the bare minimum. The Gemara asks, and we might have already answered this question, but the Gemara asks, Oise uporea, what do you mean he's going to work and pay off the loan? Kama kama kodishle. As whatever he produces immediately becomes sanctified as per the original terms of the master. The Gemara answers, as we explained earlier, Bepochos pochos mishove pruta. He, the slave, is working and producing and paying off the loan with money, with income, before it reaches a pruta in value. We use the example before, he's a toothpick maker, and five toothpicks are worth a pruta. At the point that he produces four toothpicks, every four toothpicks he gives to the person that loaned him the money, so that those four toothpicks are worth less than a shovet pruta, and hence do not become sanctified, and it is useful for paying off the loan. Hachi nami mistabra. This explanation is also likely that the din of Rav, number one, if you remember the crown, number one, is, as we explained, Ma'aleh lo yimizoynos, the master is supporting the slave. Why is that mistabra? Diyama Rav. Rav has a second halacha regarding sanctification of slave income, which reads, Hamakdish yidei avdoi oisa eved oisa vi'oichel de'i lo avdo man polachle. A master who sanctifies his slave's income, that slave basically ignores the sanctification. He goes and he produces income and uses that to support himself. And because if not him, man polachle, who's going to work for him? In other words, who's going to support him? So that's a second teaching of Rav. What's the outstanding difference between Rav number one and Rav number two? In halacha number two, the hekdish is not chal. We don't see the hekdish setting in. And in halacha number one, the hekdish, the sanctification, does set in. E amrs bishlamo hach b'male v'eino yochel. If you say that the first din of Rav, where we saw the hekdish was chal, it's because first of all, the master is supporting the slave, and in general, a master cannot say asei imi v'eini zoncha. Veha, and the din number two of Rav, where we saw that the hekdish doesn't set in, the sanctification doesn't take hold. V'sheino male, the master is not supporting him. If he's not supporting him, as we said, who's going to support him? Shapir. So then everything works out well. And just to repeat, like, the main point, the analysis that we provided results in the issue, the original issue, of a master saying to his slave, "Asei mi v'eini zoncha," as a non-possibility. But if you're going to say hach number one, halacha number one, where the hekdish set in, besheinoi male v'yochel, the master is not supporting him, and in general a master can say asei mi v'eini zoncha if that's what the circumstances of number one are. In fact, then what in halacha number two of Rav, why is there any need to have for Rav to express the following quote, "Di lo avda man polich le," that if he doesn't support himself, so who's going to support him? Man deboy niflechei. Well, anyone that wants to support him, let him support him. And really, in other words, it means who cares? Let him starve. Let's go over this last point again. If you're going to say that halacha number one of Rav, namely where the hekdish is chal, is a case where the master is not supporting him, so in halacha, and that the Rav is allowed to put his slave in this lurch, meaning asei imi v'eini zoncha, you are going to work for me, as in general the principle, and in the case of course where the master sanctifies it, so that the work goes to the hekdish, but that in theory a master can say to the slave, you're going to give me your income and I am not going to support you. Then in halacha number two of Rav, where he expresses a concern, well, who's going to support the slave if the slave doesn't support himself? Well, who cares? It's kind of irrelevant once you grant the master the power to say, "Asei imi v'eini zoncha." If you're worried about who's going to support the slave, well, who cares really? That's what the Gemara's intention. He says, "Man deboy niflechei." Whoever wants to let him support him. So you can see that the fact that Rav taught in halacha number two that if the master is not supporting him, then that slave is going to support himself because otherwise no one else is going to do it. El alav shma mino, we therefore must conclude that eino yochel shma mino. Notice we have the dashed bow tie shape. It's to draw your attention that up till now we've been going in the direction trying to say that a master could say that to his slave, asei mi v'eini zoncha. Here the Gemara's concluding note, from Rav's teachings, you can see that that is not an option. It's kind of a conclusion through, I don't know if you want to say through default or through inference, but working from halacha number two back to halacha number one of Rav, you must conclude that this, that the master doesn't have that potential of saying asei imi v'eini zoncha. And rather, all the master can say to the slave is, say maise yodecha b'mezoneisecha. Now the Gemara goes on with another triangle. The structure of the Gemara might appear odd. We just concluded the whole issue. What are you going on with further discussion on the topic? So Rashi explains, with this Toshma, the purpose of this is to show that there is another Amora that disagrees with Rav. Rav, we mentioned Rav was a very major Talmudic figure. He was the first of the Amoraim, and sometimes he's in fact referred to as a Tana. But the Gemara wants to show here that there's another great Amoraic figure that disagrees. We'll see. It's Rabbi Yochanan. And just let your eyes skim ahead, just on this, as far as the structure of is concerned. The Gemara is going to try to prove that the master does have that option of saying, asei mi v'eini zoncha. And then you'll see there's an inverted triangle. And the Gemara is going to have some questions regarding that. And the final conclusion, you can see there's a bow tie where the Gemara says, Shmamina yachol shmamina. So the Gemara will conclude, like the fourth triangle was trying to say, that there is an Amora that disagrees with Rav. So now let's read the Gemara. Toshma diyoma Rabbi Yochanan hakoteya yad avdoi shel chaveroi. Someone comes along and damages his friend's slave. He cuts off the arm of his friend's slave. There are payments when damage is incurred. Payments, several different kinds of payments must be of medical expenses. There's unemployment that results. There's embarrassment fees. Different fees. In the case of an Evid, so we don't have to talk so much about Boshes, but there are other fees must be paid. So Rabbi Yochanan says that this offender, no same shifta urufulasoi l'raboi v'oisoi ha'evid nizoi min hatstoka. The shifto, the unemployment that must be paid, this as a result of his being injured, he can't, he's not going to be able to work, and medical bills, those are paid to the master, and the eved, the slave, will be supported from public funds, from tzedakah. Well, what do you see from here? That the master is benefiting from the income, from the monies that this slave is causing. And the master doesn't have to support the slave. Shmami no yochol harav loymar le'eved. We can conclude from here in general, from the fact that it says the unemployment goes to the master, and the slave is supported from stoka, from public funds. It must be then that the rav can say to a slave, I say imi v'ein izon. The rav is the master. The master can say to the slave, you're going to work for me, and I'm not supporting you. Gemara says, no, you can't see that from here, because we're talking about a case where the master is supporting the slave. Well, what's this idea of drawing support from public funds? Rashi says, he needs extra food. Because he's ailing, he needs more than his regular food maintenance. The Gemara says, if that's the case, ihachi nizon misparnes meboile, the language doesn't seem to reflect that we're talking about hadofa. If it was hadofa, the language, the proper Hebrew word would be parnosa. The word nizon, which is what Rabbi Yochanan said, the oisev in nizon, that indicates basic maintenance. So we're not talking about hadaf over here. We're talking about basic maintenance, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan is telling us that the slave's basic maintenance is coming from stoka, not from the master. Elolav shmamino yochol shmamino. Therefore, we conclude that a master, according to Rabbi Yochanan, could tell his servant, "Asei imi, you're going to work for me." V'eini zonchan, I'm not going to support you. Now the Gemara goes over some details regarding the case that Rabbi Yochanan featured. Omar Mar. This is, of course, a quote from that which was said above. No sein shifto rufuosoi l'raboi. The unemployment fees and medical fees are paid to the master. The Gemara asks, shifto, pshita. The unemployment going to the master, that's obvious. So why does Rabbi Yochanan have to say the obvious? So the Gemara says, well, Rabbi Yochanan's goal really was refu asai, it's the richale. He was really trying to teach us about the medical payments go to the master. The Gemara asks, refu asa, the day he, the boy, isuye be, the refuah, the medical pays, the day he, meaning they should go to the slave, and he will take the money and pay a doctor. Itsuye means for healing. So what do you mean that the medical payment is made to the master? Lo tsricha. The case that Rabbi Yochanan is addressing is needed for the following. The amduha l'chamisha yoimi. He was evaluated. The slave was evaluated as needing, medical expenses to be paid for 5 days. The avdu le'samo harifo v'itzi betloso yomi. And they prepared a very intense potion that healed him in 3 days. And my understanding is that the court assigned demanded from the perpetrator 5 days of medical bills. So that is what the perpetrator must pay. The slave in reality was healed after 3 days because of the potency of the medicine that had been prepared. Now as they say, there's no free lunch. He got healed fast, but it involved a great amount of pain. Mahu detema, I would have thought, tsara didehu, the tsar, the pain that this extra potent medicine created, which involves tsar, involves pain, the pain payment due to the Eved should be paid to the Eved. Komashmalon, what Rabbi Yochanan reveals to us is that extra payment, the tsar payment, that is, goes to the master. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Rashi is commenting on the original appearance of the word refuah. Refuaso lekame porach. The Gemara is going to ask, and now we've already seen the Gemara. Haboy lemisva lerofe. That should be paid to the doctor. In the Gemara, it said it's paid to the slave, but I think the understanding is obvious. It's paid to the slave, who will then give it to the doctor. Huadin lenisko v'tsaro. Similarly, with regard to those payments, nezek and tsarilo nisko lo itzdrich dehainu deme yado pshita l'rabehu. Referring what Rashi is anticipating is that when we discuss tort law, there are actually 4/5 payments. I hesitate on the 5 because the 5th is boshes, and when you're dealing with slaves, we don't discuss boshes. But there are other payments made. And the payments have names to them: nezek and tsar. The Rabbi Yochanan did not mention them. He mentioned sheves and refuah. So, and Rashi's telling us that those are obviously paid The Nizko is obviously, damage costs are obviously paid to the master, but that's what Demei Yodo would refer to. Upshita l'Rabbehu, the Afchasei Mikaspe, by his arm being cut off, so he is severely depreciated. Vitzaro Nami Bechlau Rufuaso, the Hochahu can Mefarsh L'Kamei. When you speak about the pain, pain is included in the refuah payment, as the Gemara explains onwards, and we read the Gemara already. The high refuaso, the healing payment that the Gemara said is paid to the master, Tzara Desama Harifahu, it's the pain that the slave experienced because of the intense, potent medicine. There's also the pain of the initial injury. And the Gemara wanted, from that we concluded that the unemployment payment goes to the master. Slave is supported from public funds. That was the basis for concluding that a Yochol Rav Lomar Asei Imi V'Eini Zoncha. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads, Birur, an analysis, Im Shichur Eved Nechshav Kechoiv Oy Zchus, is the freeing of a slave from the slave's standpoint considered something that is detrimental, a choiv, or a zchus, or something that is beneficial. Nafkamina, the practical difference between these possibilities, im achrei matan shtar shichur l'shliach, if after a master delivers a document of freedom, of release, to an agent, to a shliach, yochol harav lachzer boi, can the master back out, midin ein choven loy l'odom elo b'fonov, based on the principle that one cannot impose loss, detriment upon an individual unless you are in his presence. Here we're dealing with an agent that's receiving the document in order to give it to the slave who is not present or who didn't appoint this agent. What is the din regarding the master's ability to back out, to reverse, say, give me back that shtar shichur? We're going to continue in the Gemara text with a Tanaic source in which there's a give and take between Rebbe Meir and the Rabbonan. The source opens up with Rebbe Lozer, who moderates this, or who represents, he's a representative of the opinion of the Rabbonan, and he reports what their conversation was like. Now, Rebbe Meir holds that it is a chov, it is detrimental for a slave to be freed. That's to be noted at the outset. Tanya, Omar Rebbe Lozer, Omarnu lo Lemeir. It's called Meir because Rebbe Lozer was a colleague of his, a friend of his, and hence you don't see the title Rebbe Meir. So Rebbe Lozer says that we said to Meir, "V'halo zchus hu la'eved shiyotze mitachas yedei rabo l'cherus." It's beneficial for a slave to leave servitude and become a free man. Omar lanu, Rebbe Meir said back, "Choiv hu lo." It is to his detriment. Shim hoya eved kohen poislo min hatruma. If this was a slave owned by a kohen, you are now, by freeing him, causing him to be disqualified from eating of truma that up till now, as a possession of the kohen, as a kinyan kaspa of the kohen, the eved kohen was entitled to eat truma. The truma is the tithe given to kohanim. Non-kohanim, for example, are not allowed to eat truma, but that which is a possession of the kohen is entitled from the Torah to eat truma. So now by freeing him, you're detaching him from the master, the kohen, and he can no longer eat truma. So his freedom is a loss. Omarnu loy, we said to Rebbe Meir, v'haloi ma im yirtze shelo lozuno v'shaloi lefarnaso rashoi. Let me point out before we get to the Gemara itself, the discussion here is lacking, we'll say, a sense of continuity. There's something disjointed about this give and take. The Gemara will point that out. And for the meantime, we're going to read the source, recognizing ahead of time that there's something lacking in the logical flow. And we'll just translate in for the meantime. So we said to Rebbe Meir, what do you mean that it's to the detriment of the slave to go free? If the master should have so desired not to support the slave, the master had that option. So that by being free and losing the support of the master is no loss. So being freed is not a loss. Even as a slave, his support could have been deprived. Omar Lanu, the Rabbi Meir said back to us, Uma ilu eved kohen sheborach v'eishes kohen shemordo al bailo halo oichlin betruma v'ze einu ochel. The slave of a kohen, or the wife of a kohen, a woman who comes from a non-kohen household that marries a kohen, is entitled to eat truma. Now, if one of these characters, the Eved Kohen or the Ashes Kohen, rebelled and left the domain of their husband / master, they would still be able to eat truma. A freed slave is not allowed to eat truma. Aval isha choiv hula. Everyone acknowledges that a woman to be freed, to be divorced, is to her detriment. She came poslim min atrumu mafsido min amazonos. By divorcing a woman, if she's married to Kohen, she becomes unfit to continue eating truma, and she loses support that otherwise she would be receiving from her husband. We translated the source. I think that you can see there's something lacking in the flow of the source, and the Gemara asks, Mai ka'omru lei umai ka'mahader luhu. Let's glance at Rashi on the fifth line under the Gemara text. My ko amri leu, my ko hamadar mahadar lahu, klomar tshuva sheshivim. The response that said the uma eved kohen sheborach regarding the slave of a kohen who ran away. Mat tshuva hi lamasha omru lo al hamazonos. How does that response relate to that which was said beforehand regarding the mizonos, regarding the master's right not to support the slave? So the Gemara explains, Hochi ka'omar luhu. This is what Rabbi Meir intended when Rabbi Meir spoke about the Eved Kohen, the slave of the Kohen that ran away and was still able to continue eating truma. Rabbi Meir was saying to them as follows, Hishavtuni al hamazonos. You had a successful response to me regarding mazonos. In other words, I had been claiming that the freedom of the slave is to his detriment. But you pointed out that the master, even without freeing him, could have deprived him from food, from mizonos, from support. By being freed, that doesn't constitute by necessity a loss of his being supported. Even without being freed, he could have been in a situation of not being supported. So that you've made your point regarding mizonos, that the freedom does not constitute a detriment. However, there is still an element of detriment regarding the slave's freedom. Uma tishivuni al hatruma. By the way, notice this is part of a long answer, so notice the long answer marking. What are you going to say, says Rabbi Meir, regarding the matter of truma? Regarding truma, there is definitely a loss to the slave. As a slave, he could have eaten truma by being freed. The freedom is that which is going to cause him to lose the truma. The chitemru, you'll say that iboy zorik legita upasile. you'll say that the receipt of the shaliach, of the agent, the agent's receiving of the freedom document, that's not a chova. That act is not really an act of detriment, because even without the agent, the master could have prevented the eved, the slave, from eating truma. And how would that have been if the master should have simply thrown the divorce, or the freedom document? The Gita is the get shichur, the freedom document. He could have thrown that at the slave, and once it lands within the four amos of the slave becomes freed without any agent involvement, without any shaliach. So you might want to say that the agent's receipt of the freedom document itself is not an act of detriment. The master could have stopped the slave from eating truma anyway. That's not true. Shavik levi orik velzel alma. That slave, if he saw that that the master was going to throw a get shichur in his direction, he could have run away, and the document wouldn't have landed within his four amos. So it wasn't necessary. It's not necessarily so that the master had the power anyway to prohibit him from truma. It comes out then that only through the agent's receipt of the get shichur does the slave lose the truma. And this is illustrated by the continuation at the top of Daf Yud Gimel. Uma ilu eved kohen sheborach v'yeshes kohen shemordal b'ilo halo oichlim b'truma v'zeh einu ochel. If the eved of a kohen or the wife of a kohen would have rebelled and ran away, the slave ran away, the woman rebelled, she would still be able to eat truma. But this one, the freed slave, through the receipt of the agent, he does not eat truma. So what do you see? Says Rabbi Meir. I think Gemara says Shapir Ka'omar Lahu. That seems to be a very strong argument on Rabbi Meir's part that the receipt of the shaliach is the detrimental act, is the power that prohibits the slave from eating truma. Omar Rava. Rava says, well, yeah, because of this argument, Hainu deka mahadri le b'masnisin. The response to this was found in the Mishnah. There was a phrase in the Mishnah. When we learned the Mishnah, we said we're going to have to leave it aside and not explain it, not relate to it, because it was vague at the time. It's only now that we'll be able to appreciate it. This was, of course, the Mishnah of Daf Yud Aleph Amid Beis. At the end of the Mishnah, the Rabbi Meir had been arguing that the shliach's receipt of the get shichur passels the eved from eating truma, just like a divorce passels the wife of a kohen from eating truma. So the Rabbanan said back in the Mishnah, Yud Aleph Amid Beis, Mitneshu Kinyono. Oh, well, what does that mean? So we look in our Gemara, and what do they mean? De'i boi shokil arba zuzi mi Yisrael uposel le kol hecha de'isei. Had that Eved Kohen ran away, does that mean that the only way to stop him from eating truma is the receipt of the get shukha on the part of the agent? That's not so. The master could have made a deal with someone, received payment from someone, and in exchange for the payment, sold the slave, wherever he was, to the buyer. That's what the Gemara means. The Iboi, if the master had wanted Shokil, he would have been able to take Arba Zuzi, four Zuzi, an amount of money from a Yisrael. Yisrael obviously is a non-Kohen. And by taking payment from some outsider who's interested in buying that slave, albeit he's not around right now, but he's willing to pay money for a slave that he'll hopefully get, who's buying him? A non-Kohen. Upasile, that renders the slave disqualified from eating truma, kol hechadise, wherever he is. So what do we see from here? Even without the agent, the shliach, receiving the get shechur, the slave loses out. So that's the Rabbanan. We're arguing the agent's receipt of the get shechur does not represent the act of an act of detriment, which we defined till now, that if that's the only way to disqualify him, so it would be considered choven, an act of detriment, of loss to the slave. But since there are other ways to deprive the slave of truma, the shliach's receipt of the get shechur is not considered a violation of the principle of ein choven lo liadam ela b'fanav. The Gemara now turns its attention to Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir was arguing that a slave to be freed is a loss to the slave. And that's based on that. Rebbe Meir said that a master who gives a release, a freedom document to an agent, the master could back out. And that's because of the principle of ein choven lo l'adam ela b'fanav. The deal is not signed, sealed, and delivered outside the presence of the one who's losing out. So ulu Rebbe Meir, teinach evet koyen. From Rebbe Meir's standpoint, the freedom of the slave is considered to his detriment because he's losing out on eating of truma. That's all fine and good if you're talking about the slave owned by a Kohen. Eved Yisrael, my ikol emeimar. What about the slave owned by a non-Kohen, which is going to be probably the majority of slave situations? Even without his being freed, he's not getting truma. He's the possession of a Yisrael. And a non-Kohen who owns a slave, just like the master cannot eat truma, he's a non-Kohen, the slave cannot eat truma either. So even without the freedom, he's not going to be getting truma anyway. Why then does Rebbe Meir say that freedom of slaves, seemingly across the boards, is considered a detriment? Omar Rebbe Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok, mipnei shemafsido mishpocha k'nainis. The reason the freedom is to his detriment, according to Rebbe Meir, is because up till now he could have married a Canaanite. Canaanite is an expression meaning a non-Jewish bondmaid. Even though a slave is a category of religious identification that is not total Gentile, nor is he total Jew. As such, as an Eved Knaini, he is allowed to marry a Shivcha Knaini. I think I might have misread that word. Let's read that again in the Gemara. Menei Shemafsido mi Shivcha Knaini. A heathen bondmaid. Because by being free, he becomes a full-fledged Jew. Adarabba, to the contrary, why do you consider that a loss? Harehu matiru b'bas horin, by being married, by being freed and becoming a full-fledged Jew, he can now marry a regular Jewish woman. She's called a bas horin. The Gemara says, no, as far as in the Eved's mind, he would prefer to have as his mate a shifcha kanainis, sh'avdo behefkeira nicha le, zilole, shichole, pritzole. We take a look at the Rashi. Zilole, zololohi be'enov, lezalzeel ba, lechol ta'avoso. Upritzole, misnaheges imo bepritzus. There's certain standards of propriety that apply to we'll say a Jewish marriage. Those standards of, we'll say, propriety, certain areas that people will behave with, restraint, those practices are unique to the, we'll call it, the Jewish couple. The non-Jewish couple, and particularly the slave couple, they're the we'll say the moral behavior or the level of, let's say, liberties that the couple will practice during intimacy, for example, are quite broader, quite more extensive than you would find in a marriage between a Jew and a Jewess. Hence, from the Eved standpoint, being freed is then going to deprive him from mating with a Shivcha, Kenainis, and as we explained, that to him would be a loss. That would be Rabbi Meir's response on the matter of an Eved Yisrael, the Eved of a non-Kohen. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.